Everyone, so I will tell you about the transient that happened last year in NGC 300 in a nearby galaxy. It has nothing to do with 1ACE, so I'm sorry about that, but I hope you will find it exciting anyways. So this is work that I have done at Ohio State with my advisor Chris Stanek, and also people here, Todd Thompson and Alkista are here, and also our people at OSU and Space Telescope, and also Roberta Humphreys and University of Minnesota. So I will tell you a little bit about this transient, why it's so exciting. So first, it was in a very nearby galaxy at 2 megaparsecs, discovered in May 2008 by an amateur astronomer, a very good amateur, Bertrand Monnard. You can see there the discovery image. It was discovered, it had a very faint absolute magnitude when it was discovered, about minus 13 in V-band. And the spectrum was similar to the so-called supernova impostors and BA381 variable also was very similar to that. So essentially, it was a type 2N spectrum with narrow lines of helium, and hydrogen are the ones that dominated the spectrum, basically. The most exciting thing, though, came after Ido and Alicia looked at pre-explosion images obtained with HST. There were very deep images obtained of that galaxy for a completely different project. And in fact, they found nothing at the position of the transient to very deep limits, like 28 magnitude in V-band. So just from that observation alone, you would say that the progenitor star was a low mass star, or two solar masses, or so, less than two solar masses or so. However, we looked at Spitzer images. There were medium-infrared images obtained also before the transient. And there was, in fact, a very, very, very luminous infrared source at the position of the transient, about 10 to the 4, well, I will tell you a little bit more in detail later, about 5 times 10 to the 4 solar luminosity. So it was associated, in fact, with a massive star explosion. And you can see here from the paper of Howard Bond et al., this is the pre-explosion HST image. This is a post-explosion HST image. You can see the astrometry there. That is very good. The circle is not the error circle. It's much, I think it's like 10 times bigger than the error. And you can see that there is essentially nothing there. This is just a zoom in of that part. So if you put together the optical upper limits, so this is in red here, this is the lambda and lambda as a function of wavelength for the progenitor star, the upper limits from the optical HST imaging, and then the booming mid-infrared source, you can see that there is a very bright source out, as I said, 5, 10, 10 to the 4 solar luminosities, a temperature of about 300 Kelvin, and a blackbody radius, this is a characteristic radius of a couple hundred AU. So one very interesting thing is that this transient, in fact, there was another one that happened in 2008, just by chance, in NGC 6946, which is a little bit farther away at 6 megaparsecs. But in fact, we also, for that one, found nothing in optical images. It's a little bit farther away, and we also had a little bit shallower images, so the limits in the optical were not as good as NGC 300. But in the mid-infrared, we also detected a source with very similar characteristics, essentially the same luminosity between 4 to 6 times 10 to the 4 solar luminosities, same temperature, and also same characteristic radius. So essentially, this was a completely self-enshrouded massive star, completely self-enshrouded in its own circumstellar dust. So what we did is we looked at the characteristics of the progenitors compared to stellar populations in nearby galaxies. And if you look at a color magnitude diagram, we have to look at it in mid-infrared because they were not detected in optical. So this is absolute magnitude at 4.5 micron. This is on Spitzer band, and this is 3.6 minus 4.5. So you can see this as a color or a temperature going to lower temperatures in this way. So you can see that basically all the stars in a nearby galaxy, in this case it was M33, They lie essentially at zero color. They have no dust, essentially. And then you have this very prominent sequence, which is the thermally pulsating AGB sequence. So a lot of low mass AGB stars and also high mass AGB stars lie on this sequence. And then you have the two progenitors of these two transients, both NGC 300 and SN1008S. They are essentially, I mean, if you continue this sequence, you could say roughly that they are in the tip of this thermally pulsating AGB sequence, although there are differences. And then you can see here all the color. I won't tell you all the details, but you can see the names here if you recognize them. These are massive stars in our galaxy, all the color points. Red supergiants, blue supergiants, Wolf Rayet stars, LVVs, etc. And what I want you to take from this is that at least from the optically selected massive stars populations in our galaxy, LMC, SMC, the progenitors of these two transients don't look at all like them. Okay. However, they do seem to be in this continuation of the AGB sequence, and we selected some candidates, so they are essentially very rare compared to massive stellar populations in any given galaxy. So this is a little bit of a summary of the properties of both the progenitors and the transients for NGC 300 and 2008S. I am putting them both in the same class because they are very, very similar. They have both very low peak magnitude of minus 13 to, minus 14, in fact, was 2008S. Minus 15, there was an R event that may be similar, and also integrated total energy. The spectra were essentially an optically thick wind. So they were dominated by hydrogen, helium, calcium 2 lines in emission, with velocities ranging from about 100 or less kilometers per second to more than 1,000 kilometers per second. They varied a little bit on time, depending which one of the two, 2008S or NGC 300. And their progenitors were massive, dust-enshrouded stars. And just from the luminosity and looking at models of massive stars, we can say that the progenitor mass is in this interesting range in which you either produce a white dwarf below about 8, 10 solar masses, or you produce a core collapse supernova above that, that cutoff of mass. And also, very recently, we have found also, well, also mainly by Nando Patat, work by Patat, also by Wesson et al., that these transients are also dusty. So not only the progenitors were dusty, but they seem to have retained most of the progenitor dust in them. So all the essentially the shock that propagated didn't destroy most of the dust of the progenitor, and it retained. And it's also asymmetric. So this is a very recent result, I think, from last week or 2 weeks ago, coming from spectropolarimetry of NGC 300, in fact. So what are these things? There are different possibilities, but in Todd Thompson's paper, we list some of the ones, at least, that can explain most of the observations that we see from the progenitors and from the transients being low luminosity, progenitors being completely self-enshrouded, and now 10 to 12 solar masses. I mean, in that range between, big range between 6 and 15 solar masses, depending on the tracks, et cetera. One of the most interesting ones is that it was an electron capture supernova. So it was a massive, essentially a massive AGB star with an oxygen neon core, and it had electron capture in that from magnesium in that core, and it exploded as a real supernova. So for that, the progenitor mass range is out 8 to 10 solar masses. There are possibilities that it was, in fact, a low luminosity, a normal core collapse supernovae between now 10 and 12 solar masses. Take these with a grain of salt. I mean, a couple of solar masses, more or less. For this, I think, it's hard to explain because we also see this low luminosity type 2P supernovae that look very similar to a normal type 2P, which seem to be in this range of masses or even below that, about nine solar masses or so, for example, 2005 CS. So probably this is the less likely scenario. The next one, it was essentially just a massive star eruption. So these supernova impostors, the first one, in fact, was Eta Carina. So it was a very massive LBB that had some kind of instability, and it erupted a lot of mass, essentially, at one point. And there have been other ones observed at this luminosity range, that so-called the gap now. But there are, in fact, other events, not only these weird supernova that are appearing, but the supernova impostors are, in fact, in this range. And in this case, we will have, it would be also very interesting because we would have to explain a supernova impostor from a low mass, massive star, essentially, from a 10 to 15 solar mass star, which I don't think the models have explained so far. And finally, the other possibility is that it was a massive, it was the birth of a white dwarf. So it was not from the supernova itself. We didn't have the destruction of the star, but this was a super, essentially a massive AGB star. Somehow it had this huge eruption because of some hydro instability or something, and then it got rid of the envelope and is crossing essentially a yellow void, is crossing to become a white dwarf. So I will show you what, in fact, this is what I wanted to show you at the end. There is, in fact, a poster outside if you can see all the details. So we took a spectrum with Spitzer. Why we want to do it with a Spitzer? Because these are very luminous in mid-infrared. So that's where all the energy, essentially, or most of the energy is coming. Well, in this case, it was only like 20%, but there is a lot of energy coming in the mid-infrared range for the transients too. And in fact, if you compare the spectrum, this is the spectrum of the transient. Essentially, it has two bumps, one at 8.3 microns, the other at 12.2 microns or so. And you can see that it looks nothing like a normal type 2P supernovae, which are dominated by these fine structure lines, and also some silicon oxide between 8 and 9 microns. Or other massive stars, essentially this is IRC 10420, for which, in fact, the optical spectrum looks very similar. The mid-infrared spectrum doesn't look at all like it. Also M33 bar A, which was another yellow hypergiant, and this is an LBB. However, we found that the most similar features were found in carbon-rich AGB stars in our galaxy. So these are IRA sources which have these two bumps. I mean, the similarities are not exactly the same, but the bumps are roughly at the same positions that we found in the transient. On the full we have max is also roughly explained. So this is normalized by a continuum. These sources are, in fact, much redder. But this is kind of pretty interesting that the most similar thing we could find was carbon-rich protoplanetary nebula, in fact.
Last slide.
Okay. And if you look at the spectral energy distribution, what I told you before is that this is the transient spectral energy distribution 3 months after it was discovered. You can see that this optical near infrared and this is the mid infrared spectrum, you can see that there is a huge bump in the mid infrared. And that can only be explained if most of the mass that was there from the progenitor survived, in fact, the explosion. So that's also another thing to keep in mind. And I will just keep that there.
We have time for one short question for Jose.
Yeah.
If this really is indeed a very massive AGB star, the more metal poor the AGB star, the more dredge up there is, and the stars tend to shroud themselves more. Mm-hmm. So is there any relationship between these events and metal poor populations? Are these more metal poor galaxies?
Not really. NGC-300 is LMC metallicity at the position of the transient, and 6946 is basically solar.
No, LMC would be metal poor in this case.
Okay, compared to, okay. So you don't mean very metal poor, but no, it doesn't seem. I mean, from the deposition in the galaxies, it doesn't seem like very metal poor. No.
Before we break for lunch, Lars has an announcement.